Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, where you never know what you're going to hear. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, my number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Briefly, before we go to the phones, I just wanted to make good on my promise to tell you about a plan that the Israeli government had been mulling. This is Israel's Nature and Parks Authority. They had a plan known as 101-674788. It's a proposal that would have expanded the borders of Jerusalem Walls National Park to include a large portion of the Mount of Olives. Now, if you've been to Jerusalem, you know that it is replete with many holy sites as far as Christians are concerned. And the Mount of Olives is a very important part of that, where the Last Supper took place, for example, and where Jesus was in the, after the Last Supper, when Jesus went into the garden and prayed in Gethsemane. And there are various churches that dot the hillside that commemorate places where important moments in the life of Christ took place. And so the National Park had planned to absorb most all of these things. It was their plan, but a lot of pushback took place, especially from various Christian leaders, Catholic, Orthodox, etc. And so the bottom line is that Israel's Nature and Parks Authority announced Monday of this week that it will abandon the plan. So it's not going to do it. And they said no intention of advancing the plan has in the planning committee is present, and it is not ready for discussion without coordination or communication. And after they did all that, they got enough of the pushback that they decided that they wouldn't go forward. There was actually a proposal that was signed to opposing all of this. It was signed by the Catholic Church's Custos of the Holy Land, Francesco Patton, the Armenian Patriarch of Jerusalem, the Greek Orthodox Patriarch of Jerusalem, and they called the plan in their joint letter a brutal measure that constitutes a direct and premeditated attack on the Christians in the Holy Land. Under the guise of protecting green spaces, the plan appears to serve an ideological agenda that denies the status and rights of Christians in Jerusalem. Regretfully, they said, this is not the first time that the INPA is playing a hostile role against the churches and the Christian presence in the Holy Land. So they said, we are saddened to see such an important authority being misused in this way. Last December, the patriarchs and heads of churches in Jerusalem issued a joint statement calling for, among other things, the creation of a special cultural heritage zone for Christians in Jerusalem. The church leaders stated at that time that while they appreciated the Israeli government's commitment to uphold a safe and secure home for Christians in the Holy Land, they believed that the commitment was being undermined by local politicians, officials, and law enforcement agencies to curb the activities of radical groups. The principle that the spiritual and cultural character of Jerusalem's distinct and historic quarters should be protected is already recognized in Israel's law with respect to the Jewish quarter. Yet radical groups continue to acquire strategic property in the Christian quarter with the aim of diminishing the Christian presence, often using underhanded dealings and intimidation tactics to evict residents from their homes, dramatically decreasing the Christian presence and further disrupting the historic pilgrimage routes between Bethlehem and Jerusalem. Now, they don't say it in this particular article, which comes from the Christian Post, but when they talk about radical groups, they're not talking about radical Christian groups, they're not talking about radical Muslim groups, they're talking about radical Jewish groups who are not happy that there are Christians galore in this section of the city. So that's going on right now. So if you've ever made a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, you know the area that I'm talking about. And if you ever do make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, and I hope you will someday, everybody should if possible, then be aware that there is this kind of struggle that's going on right now. And thus far, at least, we've got I guess you might say, momentum in the direction of protecting these sites as opposed to letting them be absorbed into the national park system. And I wanted you to know about that. Let's go to Mario now in Orlando, Florida. Good morning, Mario.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Not too bad for a sinner, as I like to say.
All right. Okay, so Ukraine will either be in the influence of the liberal Marxist U.S. or right-wing Orthodox Russia. Is Vladimir Putin unjust with his invasion?
Say the last line again.
Is Vladimir Putin justified in his invasion?
I don't think so. I mean, remember the moral principle, Mario, that you can't do something evil in order to pursue a good goal. It would be a good goal to feed homeless people and hungry people. That's a great goal. We should do that. But it would be evil of me to murder you and steal your money so I could use that money to feed poor people. Now, that's a big oversimplification. But in essence, there's a similarity there because, at least geopolitically and strategically, Putin, in his speech, he said that a big part of this is he wants to protect the Russian people who are in that country, in the country of Ukraine. I mean, he's already nibbled off part of Ukraine. A few years ago, you may remember when he just basically went into Ukraine and took the Crimea in the south and also sections on the far east, Rostov-on-Don, that area. And so it's not as though this is the first time he's done it. He's already done it, but he says he's doing it because he wants to protect people and he wants to protect Russia. But although that may be a fine goal, I have nothing against Russians being protected from threats. That's fine. I want to be protected from threats here in the U.S. But he's going about it in a way that is immoral because he's forcibly invading a peaceful, non-threatening country that has not threatened Russia, is not doing anything to Russia. So it's not even like a just war principle in play here. He just wants the land. He wants the buffer zone. And quite frankly, if he does that there and nobody stops him from doing it, well, it sounds like to me he's likely to do it elsewhere. He may decide, you know what, Latvia and Estonia, I want you guys back in the fold. He may do the same thing in other what used to be the Warsaw Pact countries in Eastern Europe, for example. So it's a dangerous precedent, but even those matters aside, it seems to me at least that he's pursuing a good or at least reasonable goal, but he's going about it the wrong way. So as to your point about the decadent liberal United States versus the far right, is that really far right? It's hard to say exactly. Some people call it that. Orthodox Russia, which orbit would Ukraine be better in? I would say neither one. And my personal view, Mario, I'll throw it back to you because I'd like to know what you think about it. But my personal view is it's a false dichotomy to say either Ukraine is in the orbit of the U.S. or it's in the orbit of Russia. I think the third option is the better option, and that is that Ukraine should be free to decide for itself where it wants to go and how it wants to pursue its own future and not be in the grip of Russia under the guise of Russia wanting to protect Russians living in Ukraine, et cetera, et cetera. So those are some of my thoughts. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, you have a good point, them being a sovereign nation. But if you, at the same time, if you look at it from, let's say, for example, Florida seceded from the United States, and 30 years later, China is saying Florida has the right to be its own country, but the United States wants to absorb it back. And China is trying to spread communism to Florida and mm-hmm. wants it as part of its influence.
Mm-hmm. And are you talking about Ukraine's departure from the Soviet Union in 1991?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
if I can interrupt, I apologize. Just remember, they were forcibly brought into the Soviet Union under the communists. So consider and remember what Stalin did to the kulaks in Ukraine in the 30s and 40s, and the wholesale starvation of the Ukrainian people, the massive oppression. So they didn't choose to go into the Soviet Union. They were forced into it. So they were a free people before that, and they simply regained their freedom. So in terms of parallels, it wouldn't be a good parallel, I wouldn't say, to say that Florida seceded from the Union, because Florida wanted to be in the Union originally, unlike Ukraine, which had no interest in being in the Soviet Union, but they were forced to do so.
Okay. So what about the argument that the Russian people come from, its origins are in Ukraine? Mm-hmm. We're talking about like Tsarist Russia.
Right. Yeah, so ethnically, sure, they're Slavs, just as the Russians are Slavs. I mean, the Russians are made up of many different, you know, races, but the Slavs are predominant in that area. That's true. But I mean, what if the United States, what if we said, you know, what if, how about this scenario, Mario? Let's say that this president doesn't make it in the next election, and let's say a conservative pro-life Republican does. And somehow, by hook or by crook, let's say that Justin Trudeau, or Trudeau, as they say in Canada, is still in office in 2 or 3 years' time. What if the United States said, you know what, we have to protect all of those good, God-fearing people in Canada who are pro-life and they just want to do their own thing, and Trudeau is a leftist fascist, and he is, by the way, and we invaded Canada under the pretext of trying to protect the people in Canada from a left-wing fascist like Trudeau. I mean, could we justify that? I don't think we could justify that. I would stand against that because it would be the wrong means to try to maybe achieve a good end, but it would be wrong. It would be evil of us if we were to invade Canada because we wanted to save, right, you know, the quote unquote good people in Canada.
Right. Kind of like Vietnam. Yeah.
Well, except that Canada's right on our border. I mean, they're right there. It's, I mean, Vietnam's 6,000 miles away from us, depending on what part of the country. But you see what I mean? In other words, if we were to play out a scenario in Canada where we felt morally justified to seek to protect people who are being victimized in Canada, it wouldn't work morally for us to say, well, we will therefore attack Canada, kill people, crush their military, and we could crush them overnight. Canada's puny by comparison to the United States. We could crush them easily. But it wouldn't be the right thing to do, even if we had a, you know, a quote unquote good goal. That's the way I approach this issue between Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah, got a point.
So I'm glad I'm not the president of a country because I talk about a burden, huh? But we have to do the right thing.
Yeah, it's true. Well, thank you for your insight.
You got it, Mario. Thank you. And just so everybody's aware of it, I don't want a war with Russia. I don't want another war, period. Now, if we're forced into something in order to defend ourselves, we have to go to war reluctantly. Those things happen. I hope it doesn't happen. We had to do it in World War II. We had to do it because otherwise Hitler would have just steamrolled over everybody as he was doing before the U.S. and then Russia got into the war. But this is not that. And so I don't want to send our troops, our military people over there to fight against the Russians for one reason, and maybe the biggest reason of all, is it's so easy for this to escalate and get out of control very quickly. And then, yeah, you've got a third world war. And then nukes start to fly. And then, you know, it's game over at that point. That's the last thing I want. But at the same time, what do you do when you've got a bully who says, I'm going to take your lunch money and there's nothing you can do to stop me and your friends aren't going to help you? It puts us in a really weird situation because Ukraine, for example, to my knowledge at least, is not in NATO. It's not as though it's a NATO country. It's not a member. I think it's on the path to membership. And as I understand it, that's a big part of what's got Russia freaked out about this, is that they would have a NATO-armed nuclear power on its southern border. I wouldn't want to have a Russian or a Chinese, let's say, that might make it even more weird, let's say like a Chinese ally with nuclear weapons and a standing army in Mexico. I wouldn't want that. So I understand, at least in the abstract, why a country like Russia would say we don't want that, but I don't think that war is the right way to handle that problem. So tricky, to be sure. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Bill now in Iowa. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Patrick. I'm calling regarding the pro-life movement. As you know, three beings are involved in creating new life: God, a male, and a female. Mm-hmm. And my contention is that the pro-life movement has not the male has not received adequate attention and support and being held for accountability in the pro-life movement. So there's a lot of aspects to this.
Let me just make sure I understand, Bill. When you say accountability, do you mean accountability like for parental support, child support? Is that the kind of
accountability for treating a woman with respect and respecting the woman's virginity, adhering to, or at least understanding, the teachings of the church regarding sexual intercourse is reserved for marriage.
Are you talking about all men? What about men who aren't Catholic? What about men who are married to the woman who has the abortion? I mean, I realize that single men and women are involved in this to the hilt, no doubt, but there are plenty of men who have no clue what the Catholic Church's teaching is because they're not Catholic. What about them? Also, what about married men whose wives decide to have an abortion?
Well, it's a responsibility of the Catholic Church to teach what we believe and make it available to as many as possible. So I think we can do a better job than we're doing. There's avenues through social media to educate people that is there. And we need to explain why we believe, you know, why we teach the rationale for sexual intercourse being the primary purpose is procreation, and secondly it's for union of husband and wife.
Okay, so all of that being the case, all right, I'm not sure what we're doing. Are we placing blame, or what are we doing here?
I'm saying there's more that can be done, that the male is being left out in terms of education, in terms of accountability, in terms of respect for the dignity of a woman. So rape and incest and all these things, males ought to really feel reluctant to engage in that kind of activity because it's shameful.
True. Okay, so I'm going to make you Pope for 1 year, Bill. Pope Francis has died and gone to heaven. And by the way, everybody, Pope Francis has not died. This is a scenario. You're now Pope.
Okay.
What do you do? Lay out your plan for me.
I'm not Pope. I'm a layman trying to...
No. You're now Pope. You're now Pope. You got a whole bunch of great ideas on what needs to be done. So how do you accomplish what you just described? You have 1 year to be Pope and to do this. What do you do?
Well, I would engage the teaching authority of the church and the lay community. In doing this, I would have the pro-life folks partner with the pre-marriage folks so that the pro-life folks are better educated on what's being taught in the marriage prep programs.
So do you issue an encyclical letter that says, hey, Catholics, check it out. This is what I want you to do. You send out that encyclical. What else beside that would you do? What else could you do as Pope?
Why is it restricted to Catholics? I think it applies to all males.
Okay, let's say it's not restricted to Catholics. So in the time that you have with the authority that you have as Pope, what exactly do you do to get everybody in line where they say, oh, yeah, that's right, I'm not a Catholic, but the Catholic Church says I've got to do it this way. How do you accomplish that?
Well, I have, been involved in the pro-life movement, and I just feel that the male is not being adequately addressed in the pro-life movement. And I further think that partnering up with the marriage teaching of the church is an integral part of getting the word out, education-wise, as to why sexual intercourse is reserved for marriage.
Didn't Jesus do that, though, like 2,000 years ago when he said stuff
about
that?
Do you think it's adequate? Do you think it's adequate? I'm getting your perspective on this. This is why I'm calling.
I'm not trying to be querulous, but
I'm giving you my perspective, so I'm looking for your perspective.
Okay. Fair enough. And I respect that. So my perspective, Bill, is this. I don't disagree with your premise. You know, why are men raping women? They shouldn't rape women. I agree. Why are men fornicating with women and having children out of wedlock? They shouldn't do that. I agree. Completely agree. I guess what I'm coming at it from is the side of how do you actually accomplish that? I mean, it's one thing to say it. Jesus said it. The New Testament says it. The Catholic Church has been saying it for 2,000 years. There are still Catholic bishops and priests and such who say the same thing. It's one thing to say it. It's one thing to give the message, but people have to receive it. And if they don't receive it, then you're not going to see a change in the kind that you're looking for.
Well, sometimes it takes 5 or 6 times to hear it before it sinks in.
Fair enough. Well, I don't disagree with your premise. Would that these things were not happening. It would be a much better world if they weren't, but I'll have to leave it at that, Bill. Thank you for sharing that thought with me. I have to take a break, but I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show, including your phone calls, right after this.
It relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Story out of Chicago. As Chicago continues to deal with surging crime, one mother isn't going to let her son be part of the problem and get away with it. This is from the Daily Wire. Last Tuesday, a sophomore at Loyola Chicago pointed a gun at a Metra Electric train conductor on his way to school and stole all the conductor's cash. After the incident, police released photos of the suspect, 18-year-old Zion Brown, which got the attention of someone who knows Brown very well, his mother. CBS Chicago reported that around 2 p.m., Brown took out a black semi-automatic handgun and announced a robbery after taking the conductor's cash. The report stated that he ran off into the station, according to the Metro Police, and authorities released two photos, one of them showing the man with the gun in his hand on the station platform. Brown got away with the money and disposed of the gun, which was later revealed to be a BB gun. While he was able to escape the station with the stolen money, he wasn't able to get away from everyone. According to multiple reports, Brown's mother saw the photos of her son in the media and recognized him, even though he was wearing a mask. She then confronted her son, and she took him to the police. Brown was later charged with robbery and confessed to the crime. According to his defense attorney, he was just hungry and needed some money for food. CWB Chicago reported the defense attorney said Brown went to class at Loyola after the holdup. He encouraged Judge Miriam Ahmad to reflect on her days as a hungry college student as she weighed the state's request to have Brown held without bail. That argument didn't sit well with Ahmad, who said she remembered being a hungry college student, but she never considered pulling a gun on someone and taking his money. So she granted the state's no bail request. Jim, did you ever pull in a gun on anyone when you were hungry? You just needed to eat?
Never.
You ever do that?
Never.
I can say I never have either.
I'm pretty sure I just asked for some food and somebody gave me some.
I bet that conductor would have said, here's $5, go get a hamburger. I think that's great. So his mom did the right thing, as Spike Lee would say. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Luba in Phoenix. Good morning, Luba.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, Patrick, I started listening to your show probably like years ago. I accidentally found this while I was driving. And so then since then, I am listening. But today, I want, because I heard when one gentleman said, because I didn't hear from the beginning,
okay,
how Russia is trying to protect their interests.
Well, it might have been me that you heard, Luba. What I was saying earlier, and maybe you came in the middle of it, is that I had listened to Vladimir Putin's speech in which he claims that that's his reason for invading Ukraine. Now, I don't accept that. I don't agree with that, and I'm opposed to what he's doing. But just to make it clear, it was him who was saying that. I wasn't saying that I agree with him. I'm just saying that's what he is saying is as his justification for invading Ukraine.
Right, right. Yes, no, I heard that. And I heard like a gentleman was trying to say when people, you know, when Putin said that if they will put, you know, when they will be disarmed so that he is not going to attack that. Mm-hmm. I just want to come back a little bit because when Ukraine was established, it was in 890. Russia didn't exist. Russia mm-hmm. was established in the 12th century. Mm-hmm. And then slowly it was become empire, yes, and it occupied Ukraine. Ukraine then became independent in 1918.
Are you, if I can interrupt, Luba, forgive my interruption, are you Russian or Ukrainian, or what's your background?
I'm Ukrainian.
Okay. Okay, I just wanted to get a sense of where you were coming from. Please proceed.
Yes, yes. So then it was back to Russia when it was this Russian Revolution. In 1933, Ukraine was, Russia did starvation in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. It was man-made starvation where between 7 to 15 million people died in eastern part of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that, however, it was a journalist, Durante, Walter Durante. He was a good friend of Stalin. He says, no, that starvation doesn't exist. Even though it was a time when Ukraine was called a breadbasket of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm actually
people of Ukraine
familiar. Forgive my interruption again. I'm familiar with this. In fact, I even talked about this, how especially under Stalin, the Russians starved the Ukrainians. 6 million or more people were starved to death. So I'm familiar with what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. So now I just want to show a little bit that Russia has never been peaceful. So then after Soviet Union collapse in 1991, you know, Ukrainians, they want to be independent. It wasn't at the beginning. Why Ukrainian wants to join NATO? To be protected from Russians. It wasn't that they want to have this nuke. And even like now, what do we want? We don't need to have U.S. boots on the ground. What mm-hmm. we need from them, we need just help, you know, with so that we can protect ourselves. And what did happen, there was a gentleman, he said, so when Ukrainians, you know, they were on this peninsula, which they have been killed, that Russians say, yeah, just put your ammunition, just put everything, and then you can go free. When Russia occupied the eastern part of Ukraine and created this so-called republic, Luhansk and Donetsk, we had a similar situation
mm-hmm.
where they said it was like 200... it was 200 young men who were fighting for Ukraine. And they said, okay, you will have this, we are going to let you exit as long as you will put, you know, if you will not fight. They did that. That was supposed to be this green tunnel or whatever they will call this. Mm-hmm. Guess what? All those 200 men had been killed in execution style.
I believe it. I believe it, and I don't know what else to tell you, but this is what we're seeing right now is it's murky in terms of like what the average American is seeing and hearing on the news. And someone like yourself, of course, being Ukrainian, you have a knowledge of the history and the relationship between Russia and Ukraine that goes back over 1,000 years. The average American doesn't have that. So I'm glad that you're raising your voice on this issue, Luba. I really am. And I join you in praying for peace in Ukraine.
Thank you. Yes, and we do, because Ukraine, what Putin now did, he said, first of all, Ukraine, so what Ukraine wants to do, Ukraine just wants to join European Union. They are looking for the West. They want to be free because they always have been under they always have been under Soviet rules. So that's all. And what he did now, and oh, and one more thing, because I know that a lot of Russians probably listen. I do not know. There is a site, Stop Fake News. In 2014, when Russia invaded Crimea and eastern part, they said that Ukrainians, that they were nationalists. You know what?
I know. Unfortunately, I've got to press on, but I understand the point that you're making, and I agree with you. I'm glad you called today, Luba. Thank you so much. Let's go now to Eric in Madison, Wisconsin. Good morning, Eric.
Morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I know this is kind of a departure from the Russia-Ukraine situation.
We can talk about anything you want. That's just one item up for consideration.
Well, I was in a kind of a heated conversation the other day with some friends of mine, and I know that you're a music guy, and so am I. And we're talking about the current state of the world, where you know it just seems like sexuality and narcissism and just violence is just like just ever consuming, like you know, in so many different facets of kind of the worldwide society. And So the conversation went to music and kind of art in general, and I just made the comment more, but I still believe this is true, that I said that seems like if you listen to current popular music, you know, pop music, for example, and even rap music, and I do listen to some of it because I have a young teenage daughter who listens to it, it just seems like the content is so much more direct and supportive of you know, immoral sexuality and violence and just you know, complete narcissism. And so I then said that it seems to me that that's way more direct and intense as compared to music from even that, you know, the 60s, 70s and 80s. And then a number of people jumped in saying that that's not true, that art and music has always been, you know, sexual. And if you look at songs like Bob Seger's Night Moves or The Who's Squeeze Box, there's always been sexual undertones. And I said, I'm like, I don't disagree with that. I go, but it just seems like the music now is just even more direct and intense about it and even more kind of selling immorality. And I said, I just don't see that with even songs from the, you know, 70s and 80s, even though I know there was some of that going on. So am I off base? Because after the conversation, I thought, well, maybe I'm just an old fogey, and I'm of course I'm biased because I like that music. So I'd love your take on this.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the Waltons for this reason, and it'll make sense in a minute. It seems like there was an episode or two when the music of like the 1940s, so let's say early, maybe 1940, when it was moving from kind of like the ragtime type of music that was popular in the 20s and into the 30s, moving more to like big band and swing music. And I seem to remember there was a comment, it might have been by grandma, that she didn't like this new music. And it was a matter of perspective because to us, the music from the 1940s is archaic. I mean, it might be nice to listen to, but it's like, oh gosh, that is just so old-fashioned kind of music. But for the people who were adults or maybe grandparents at that time, that was newfangled music to them. And so my impression, Eric, is that part of what you're referring to is it's a generational thing where because it's not the music that we're accustomed to, like I don't like rap music, I don't like hip-hop music, I don't understand why any of my kids like it, but some of them do. And I've talked to them. I said, you know, be careful what you listen to because some of the music has, you know, calls for violence and anarchy and obviously sexual immorality and things that I disagree with because they're contrary to the gospel. And we have to be careful because you are what you eat, as the old saying goes. So I've had that conversation with my kids. But for me, I have zero interest in that music whatsoever. But they have zero interest in probably the music that their kids are listening to now. You know, my adult children. So it's generational, it seems to me. And that's why it's a matter of perspective, so that your point, which I think is a valid point, and I would agree with you, that in terms of the matter of degree, to what extent, to what degree did the songs from the 1960s, if you'd stack them all up end to end, Motown, British Invasion, classic rock, what have you, if you stack them all up end to end, how much of that would be sexual? I would say a huge amount of that was sexual. But it didn't necessarily come across so much that way. Go back and listen to some of those songs now. And boy, my eyes have been opened over the years where I've gone back and listened to the words of some of the songs that were on the top 40 playlist on AM radio back in the 70s. And, you know, you almost want to blush at what some of the things were. So by comparison, I think there is probably maybe more now than there was before, but it doesn't mean that there wasn't a lot of it before. What about violence? I would say virtually nothing that I can think of in terms of inciting people to kill police officers or to commit rape or to smash and grab, a lot of the things that are associated with rap and hip hop. I don't remember any of those things being in the classic rock era that I grew up in. So sexuality, I think there was quite a bit then. Mayhem, murder, chaos, I don't think so. But are things trending in a negative direction overall? If that's the point you're making, I would agree with you on that too. I think things are trending in a negative direction in what we're hearing in the music. So what do you think about that?
No, I totally agree. And I was just interested, you know, interested to get your take on it, because I do fully recognize that, you know, yes, there was a lot of sexual content, and especially in songs that I particularly like from the 60s and, mm-hmm. and 70s. But it just, again, I guess the point that I was really trying to make to the group was, you know, when I listen to the lyrics of just current popular pop songs and even rap songs, it's just so direct. And again, so maybe I guess what I'm trying to say is that it seems like in years past it was more indirect. And I'm not justifying the overall message. I'm just saying that it just seems like just so blatant in your face. And I just, to me, it seems like that's just more direct poison per se. But again, I can admit that I'm biased because I'm a big classic rock guy, and mm-hmm. and I like a lot of the music from the 60s and 70s and even 80s. So I don't know.
I'm with you. That's my music too. That's where I'm the most comfortable, for sure. But man, sometimes I listen to some of the top 40 stuff that came out in the 1970s. Wow. Yeah. Anyway, great conversation, Eric. I thank you for that. I'll be right back.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Talk about classic rock. Although those who don't like Genesis probably wouldn't count that as classic rock. Fair enough. Either way. 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show. Let's go to Patricia now in Phoenix. Good morning, Patricia.
Good morning, Patrick. Okay, I have a very heavy, strange situation that I'm faced with. Okay. I'm invited to a baby shower for a niece-in-law who is carrying twins through in vitro fertilization. She is a married lesbian. couple. It's a married lesbian couple.
Okay.
Each of them have an egg that's been fertilized by two different men and implanted in one of them. And those are the twins that she's carrying and that we're all supposed to be celebrating in a baby shower. And all that's in my head is how this came to be, how many babies had to die for it, for these two. And it's a very devout Catholic family who's supporting these two women. And I just don't know what to do. I can't get past this.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Well, you're right to be horrified by the loss of life that inevitably occurs in IVF treatments where a number of ova are fertilized. And then the couple selects the one that they want, and that's the one that's implanted, maybe two, I guess, in this case. And then all the others that are alive, they're either killed outright or they're put on ice indefinitely. So that's a horror story, no doubt about that, without even getting into the issue of their choice of lifestyle. I could understand why you would feel torn and why you, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm assuming part of what you're dealing with is a kind of, because you feel the repugnance about the whole situation, that you don't want to go to the shower, but at the same time, you know, there's a little baby coming into the world and that child is not at fault for anything. He or she, or they, in the case right. of the twins, you know, they didn't do anything wrong. And so how do we show love and compassion for everybody, including that little child, but at the same time not give the impression that you're condoning all the terrible things that led up to this? Is that a fair guess as to what you're feeling?
100%, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would propose this then. I would say if you were to go to the shower, that strikes me as being... the equivalent of, hey, I'm going to celebrate with you, and that's the last thing you want to do. You don't want to celebrate the bad decisions that they've made to get to this point. But on the other hand, you would be completely within your rights, and I think it would be a good thing overall to show love for this little child and to maybe send something useful for the baby. So maybe a big package of Pampers or clothing or something else, you know, that could be beneficial to the child. And you're not condoning their lifestyle or their choices by doing that. Little babies need diapers. Okay. Little babies need other things that you could supply for them or for the baby. You know, I would do something like that if I were you, you know, and if you're asking my opinion, that would be what I would try to do. I would try to show some direct support for this little baby, love and compassion. The baby has done nothing wrong. We have to see that little baby or these babies like we'd see any other children who came into the world in the normal way. We would see them the same way with the same love, the same respect, the same dignity. But to do it in a way that helps the child but doesn't at the same time give the false impression to these women that you're A-okay with what they've done. That's something I would try to avoid.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And that's what I was struggling with. And I mean, this is a very large family, and I would ultimately, knowing I would be the only one to not attend.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just hard to sit there, and I have to sit there through every holiday since they announced it at Thanksgiving, and everyone's so excited and wanting to see her belly grow and stuff. And I'm just sitting there looking at these two women like,
I know.
I don't know. It's so hard. And then to know what the children are like that she's carrying.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, yes, they are children of God. And it wasn't their fault. They are not at fault for this.
Yeah. The babies, of course, they've done nothing wrong. We should love and cherish and welcome and accept them as we would anyone else. For you know, any human being who's conceived in the image and likeness of God, as they are, deserve respect. Now, when I say any human being, it extends to all human beings. But in the case of their parents, who have done a number of very sinful things to arrive at this point, that's certainly not something that we can even give the appearance of celebrating, because that would give, that would add to the scandal that they're already giving. So you're in the difficult situation of having to be the one who's right about this and yet be regarded as the one who's wrong in the eyes of everyone else. And often when it comes down to standing up for a moral principle that you know is true, even if everyone else is going the other direction, they typically will turn you into the bad guy, the hater, the phobe, the, you know, all of those things. And sometimes there's nothing you can do other than grin and bear it and offer it up to the Lord. This sounds right. Like it might be one of those times, okay, unfortunately.
Yeah. Thank you for that, and I agree with that. I have one more quick question. Then sure. Perhaps maybe you can recommend a children's book, because they have asked that rather than cards that you buy a book for the child. And I've struggled with getting a religious book, but I don't know if I would be throwing it back in their face or any
are these
recommendations.
Catholic? Are they at least ostensibly Catholic?
Yes, it's like I said, it's a hugely devout Catholic family.
By the baby, all three...
From the grandparents to siblings and...
Mm-hmm. By the baby, all three volumes of the Baltimore Catechism, the St. Joseph edition of the Baltimore Catechism. There are three. There's one with a blue cover,
okay.
One with a pink cover, mm-hmm. And one with a gray cover. And so as a child grows up, assuming that they don't throw these away... The nice thing is that these books are very inexpensive. So even if these ladies did throw these away, it's not like you're out a whole lot of money. So like the gray okay. version, which is the older for the older ages, that's $5. And you can get the yeah. other ones for, you know, less than that, $3-4. So I would say get the St. Joseph Baltimore. Go ahead.
I'm familiar with them. I homeschooled my kids as well, and we use those.
Okay, yeah. So for the benefit of those who are not familiar with them, I'll just mention them briefly. The St. Joseph Baltimore Catechism, number one is pink. Number two is blue, kind of a baby blue color. And then number three is the gray cover. And you can wrap it up really nicely and just say, you know, as you're raising your child to know and love Jesus, these books will help. And I think
perfect.
You will have sent quite a message. Yeah. And who knows, Patricia, who knows? Maybe one of these ladies might sit down and start thumbing through these books. And who knows, maybe there will be a breakthrough for them. One or the other or both. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, that would be great. Okay, thank you so much, Patrick. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you. How about Ophelia now in San Francisco? Hi, Ophelia.
Patrick, I'll preface by saying I am certainly not justifying the invasion of Russia on Ukraine.
Okay. Could you take it off speakerphone, please? It's kind of hard to hear you.
Oh, I was the non-speaker. Sorry, maybe I was just holding it a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, this is better.
Away. Okay, thank you. I'm not justifying the Russia invasion of Ukraine in any way, shape, or form. I'm just calling to comment on how easy it is to justify. To morally justify aggression sometimes. And I speak of, you know, that's how most countries came to be, including our own country. The United States justified the fact that some people along the Mexican border mm-hmm. Wanted to secede from Mexico and how quickly they were folded into the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So we rewrite history kind of to suit us, and coming from Mexico, I know how even Mexico has rewritten its own history. Mm-hmm. Kind of washed over the Cristero War, et cetera. So that was my only comment.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, I'm half Mexican myself on my dad's side, 100% Mexican. So I would consider myself rather familiar with the Mexican-American War. And that's actually one reason, I don't know if you heard me say this, but I took pains to say earlier that the United States is not as pure as the wind-driven snow, and that we ourselves have done this before. So it's not as though, you know, the United States is exempt from this, because we've done it too. You know, it's just, but still it doesn't make what Putin is doing correct just because he wants to quote unquote protect the Russians who are in Ukraine, etc.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for all you do. It's a wonderful show. We often recommend it. We do thank a Bible you. Study in our church, and we often tell them you need to listen to Patrick to know your scripture better.
Oh, well, that's kind of you.
And
I appreciate that, Ophelia.
Stamp.
Yeah, thank you for thank that. You. I appreciate it. Yeah, for what it's worth, Ophelia mentioned the Cristero War. That took place in the 1920s in Mexico, and it's largely unknown, even by most Mexicans, I would say. They just don't know what happened. And I did a one-hour presentation on that topic. I think it's now out on YouTube, if I'm not mistaken. And if you just type in Patrick Madrid, if you go to YouTube, Patrick Madrid, Battle for the Faith in Mexico, or Cristero War, it'll be along those lines. It's a one-hour overview of the history of what happened in Mexico when the godless, communist, Freemasonic government in Mexico tried to stamp out the Catholic Church. Didn't work, but a lot of people were killed in the process, a lot of martyrs. So that's out there if you're interested. I'll be back with Hour 3 right after this quick timeout.